always heard about the bird.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are, this is Eric.
By the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen! And not a one of you is prepared for it!
And they are sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Dr. Wonders. I had to stop her from screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road. And you know, anyway. Happy Turkey Day, people. This is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the movie Home for the Holidays, 1995, directed by Jodie Foster. So this was your pick. Tell me why we're watching this movie for Thanksgiving.
I love this movie. This is this movie came into my collection. I think I rented it as a Blockbuster film at one point when, well, I should say, in Portland, it was Hollywood Video. I didn't have a Blockbuster. I had a Hollywood Video card. I think it was a rental that I picked up on a new release when it came out. 95, though. 96? No, I must have just picked it up when I'd first moved to Portland, because I watched a lot of movies the first couple years I moved here because I didn't have any friends. And I picked it up thinking, oh, it's kind of, because it was touted as this funny family holiday movie. And I thought, well, we'll give it a chance. Because it had Holly Hunter and it had Robert Downey Jr. All that time, Robert Downey Jr. wasn't always a good thing. But I have fond remembrance of Robert Downey Jr. from Chaplin. So I had rented it and brought it home, and I thought it was hilarious. And I thought it was hilarious on multiple fronts, because not only was it, did it have the same kind of family dynamic, similar to our family dynamic, how when we would all get together, there would be some kind of mayhem that would brew, and it wouldn't be anything that would tear us apart. But oftentimes, you know, we would always have fun times together where something was hilarious, and sometimes things would go a little awry, but then we would all pull it together in the end, and we would always have good memories and good stories afterwards. And this movie kind of gave me the same feeling, without quite the same dysfunctional family, though. It made me feel really normal about our family dynamic watching this very kind of strange and dysfunctional family dynamic. In some ways, just a very different take on family than I was used to. Although it was very clear that there was a very drugged up Robert Downey Jr. throughout this movie.
Oh, he was taking heroin during this movie.
Yeah, and that's, I've read that, so it in no way surprises me.
Yeah, I mean, afterward, I guess Jodie Foster gave him a letter of recommendation, which it's amazing when you have to take a letter of recommendation from other directors in order to be cast in other films, but saying that he acted very professionally during the making of this film, although she would not recommend him doing heroin anymore.
Well, I mean, really, I guess that's a...
Well, you know, I mean, yeah. Everything points to him having turned it around, which is pretty great.
No, I'm glad that he has had a renaissance and success, and that he seems to be doing good things with his money and time.
Yeah, but as we found out with Philip Seymour Hoffman, you know, the struggle is forever, apparently, so.
Oh, and I don't doubt that it's a struggle, but it was nice to see him in this movie. And I got to say, off the top, Anne Bancroft in this movie, like, and granted, I'm a big Mo, so, but, like, she looked good in this movie, and she took her clothes off in part of the movie, and she still looked great for her age.
Well,
and I realize it's probably a really sexist thing to say, but, I mean, like, she aged really well, and it just, it was kind of amazing for me to, I always forget that she takes a lot of her clothing off.
Well, and this was, this is a great cast. I mean, soup to nuts. Well done, yeah. Casting department.
Yeah, no, and I'd forgotten it was Steve Guttenberg.
Yeah, in a very serious role. Well, I mean, it was like self-important serious.
In some ways, there were almost two movies going on.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I love Cynthia Stevenson. I think one of my favorite roles she played was in was Dead Like Me. She was the mom. The TV series with Ellen Muth and Mandy Patinkin. Oh, it's great. It's two seasons long. I think I've got it all. I can actually set it down with your parents if I can find all the DVDs someplace. But yeah, I mean, it was one of those things where it gets you kind of hooked because it's a little absurd. But she actually dies in a funny way that I won't tell you about. And then... she becomes a Grim Reaper, and her boss is Mandy Patinkin, who's like the head of their little Grim Reaper squad.
I've seen her in tons of things. I just don't, I mean, I just, like, the thing is she's so, like, she just doesn't stand out sometimes. So I forget that I've seen her. And then when I see her again, I'm like, oh, I remember her.
Yeah. She's just general, like, your typical Midwest female role, she's perfect for. And she's funny.
Yeah. I think so, too.
And
she's kind of the straight man in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and she's, like, in Dead Like Me, she has the same kind of character that she's a little bit high-strung and a little bit snarky, but still you feel for her because, you know, she actually is inhabiting her character really well, so it gives you a full character. Like, everybody pretty much gets a full run in this movie, except for poor David Strathairn, but I'm sure he had a great time.
So I just have to point out Aunt Glady.
Yes. Geraldine
was
Chaplin.
Played by, who yeah. is the daughter of?
Daughter of or granddaughter of?
Daughter.
Of Charlie Chaplin?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Was her mom like 14 years old when Charlie Chaplin started dating her?
I don't know.
Because there was that
she's the granddaughter to the granddaughter to Eugene O'Neill. So
okay, I've heard the name before, but I'm gonna plead ignorance on who Eugene O'Neill is. A playwright, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay. So
yeah, but no, she was born in 1944. So when was Chaplin born? He was born in 1989, so no, I mean, he was, you know, he was about
60 years old.
55, in his mid-50s.
And her mom was, oh, this is digging deep, I realize, but.
She was born in 25, so she was 19.
Yeah, okay.
So she was substantially younger than Mr. Charlie Chaplin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That wasn't as young as he went, though. But again, different times.
Sorry. I think I just spit all over my microphone.
Well, you know.
Good thing I have the pop filter and the little giant yellow condom fuzzy thing.
For her pleasure. No. That joke falling flat.
Yeah. Waiter joke for one.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so shall we dive into the plot?
Yeah, this movie has a long open, by the way.
It does. It's fun, and it kind of sets you up in a very Hallmark movie kind of way, but then it's got a little bit more edgy. Like, everything is slightly more edgy than your typical Hallmark or like TV movie, holiday movie.
Well, and I dig that the movie is almost like a play because it's broken up into parts.
Yes, yes. And
I like that device.
Okay, which song do you suppose I should use for the opening credits of this podcast?
Oh, God. Are you going to use the opening song from this movie?
I was thinking about it.
Oh, it's a terror.
Remake of Evil Ways by Carlos Santana by Rusted Root.
Please just use Janis Joplin. Please just use the.
Nope, don't want to use that song. I'm probably not going to. No, I'm probably not going to use Evil Ways either. Although it's definitely got a certain jazzy, you know, arrangement to it.
I hate that. I don't like the song, but this version of it, I hated it in this movie. I hated it.
You're not like a light jazz fan.
No.
I can't say that I am for real either. I mean, I don't have a ear for jazz necessarily. I mean, it's pleasant enough, but I'm not, you know, passionate about it.
I think the biggest disappointment that I issued to our parents collectively was when mom and dad wanted me to go to the Doobie Brothers with them in Vegas. And I was like, no.
Oh, that's too bad.
There's a lot of things I will sit through, but the Doobie Brothers is not one of them.
Yeah. Okay. Well.
No, I mean, look, and I said, look, hey, if you guys want to go, I can go on a night. I'll go find something to do. Really, I'm not ungrateful. It's just I wouldn't enjoy it, and the tickets aren't cheap, and I hate for you guys to spend that kind of money for me not to enjoy it. Went to Rod Stewart. Not a Rod Stewart fan. It was a good show. Went to Elton John, fantastic show. Glad I went. Best show. I mean, so I'm not averse to shows, but I know my limits, and that was one of them. But I think it was a disappointment to both their parents.
Well, just don't badmouth the Stones and you'll be okay, I think.
I'd be out of the will.
No, your picture will be turned around on the...
No, I got to wear... Oh, that reminds me. I got to wear the baseball hat getting off the plane.
Yeah, there you go. So
actually getting on the plane because we're meeting them on the plane.
Oh, excellent. Well, no, I think the song I'll use, and if you're listening to this, everybody else, you'll have already heard it. I think I'm going to use Surfin' Bird. Everybody knows.
Which one was that?
Everybody knows the bird is the word. Bird, bird, bird. Oh. Bird is the word.
To accompany the tire squeals.
Yeah, well, partly because my bird loves that song.
Really?
And my daughter also. And I think it's pretty funny. And it also, it's a funny Family Guy sketch where they just, you've seen the episode where he does the Surfin' Bird?
I have not.
Yeah. No. It's really funny. It's in Family Guy fashion. It's one of those jokes that it's just pounded, like it's repeated until it's not funny anymore. And then it's repeated some more until it's now even more funny. Also, on a side note, I was this close to ordering a plus-size banana costume so I could be the peanut butter jelly time guy for Halloween. So maybe next year.
And who would have been your cohort?
Oh, no. It's a single-person act. I just need a pair of maracas and a banana costume, and I'm good to go.
But no, you need that. That's a tandem costume. You can't do that by yourself.
Isn't it just on the scoreboard, the banana with the maracas?
I don't know. I see. I just know it from Family Guy. So.
No. I think it's just one thing. It's peanut butter jelly time. Oh. Yeah.
All right. Well, you could be right. Yeah. Well, I had no costume this year, so.
Oh, me either. But you never know. I might next year. We'll see.
My costume was failure and shame.
Well, the thing, that's the other thing about things that you can do when you have a kid that, like, instantly after going to Trick or Treat Town, which is where we paid $8 a piece to get in, but then we paid $55 worth of tickets to use to get stuff when you get inside there.
Wow, that's quite the racket.
It is. And we probably overbought the tickets, and there was no reason, like, I should have bought a $12 brisket sandwich that was mostly fat and really gross. But next year I'll know. Because, you know, she got to trick-or-treat a little bit, see other costumes, and but what was funny was, when we were done, I told Kelly, I'm like, we need to call our parents and thank them for taking us to crappy shit when we were kids, because Journey had a great time, and it was boring and annoying for us. And that's kind of what a lot of kid events are, and you just kind of have to, I need to put on my peanut butter jelly time face and when I go to these things, so that I can have as much enthusiasm as possible without being creepy. Because, you know, I mean, if, for instance, and this is not going to probably happen, but if she wanted to go and, like, get a picture with Santa, even though it's kind of expensive and a pain in the ass, it would be, you know, it'd be worth it if it would make her happy for the most part. There's, the school is showing In-N-Out at 6:30 on Friday. And I'm thinking about seeing if either all three of us or just me and Journey will go see the movie.
At school?
At the school.
In-N-Out?
No, I'm sorry. Inside Out, not In-N-Out.
Oh, my God.
Oh, you love the Kevin Klein, Tom Selleck
movie. What kind of school are she going to?
Well, you know, for kindergartners. They'll sell hot dogs. Okay. Hot dogs, corn dogs. It's actually sort of a phallic concessions, really.
Okay. All right, then.
What's the opposite of the corn dog? What is that, a funnel cake? What's the female equivalent of a corn dog? I don't know. Taco.
There. An elephant ear?
Maybe.
A funnel cake. I just got that. You're a terrible human being.
Well, I'm trying to think of something that looks... Anyway, never mind. So...
If you're saying the corn dog is the male equivalent, the funnel cake would have to be the female equivalent.
Yeah, I think so. Pretty much.
Just go with that and be happy with your answer.
Okay.
And just,
All right. If I find something else, I'll have to send you a picture immediately. If I find something more appropriate, but you
stifle
know,
that urge.
Like if you're a presidential candidate or any person in the public or even any person, you should not be eating a corn dog in public, because no matter what, if somebody takes a picture of you, it looks gross and suggestive. And a little demeaning, not very presidential.
That's probably almost certainly always true.
Okay, here, let's do an experiment. You got the Google open?
I do have the Google open.
Just type Hillary corn dog and look for images.
Well, I don't get a corn dog, but I get much worse, more unfortunate things. Look, it looks like some ice cream thing, which I think resembles what looks like a horse penis. So
yeah, that's kind of the thing, is that, you know, and you know, okay, for Hillary Clinton,
there's a whole website devoted to this called celebritieseating.com.
Oh, it's hilarious. Well, that's the thing.
Although I gotta say that the Sarah Palin three invisible dicks picture is hilarious.
Okay, I don't know what that means, but oh well.
Here, I'm going to send this to you right now.
Okay.
I don't know if I can do this. This is riveting, I realize, but...
No, let me tell you. I know what it is. The equivalent of Hillary Clinton eating a corn dog at the state fair would be Bernie Sanders looking up from a pie-eating contest.
Okay, I just texted you the picture. We have gone off the rails way early tonight.
Oh, that's okay. That's what podcasts are for.
Oh, do you have the picture?
Yes, that's pretty funny. And see, That's the part of like politics that I like the Drudge Report. I used to, I still go to the Drudge Report as my first place for news because it's a pretty good aggregator. As long as you're not looking for sports or maybe you're just looking for political news, the Drudge Report does a good job, even though it definitely puts the Drudge spin on things. But it like you will never see a picture of Hillary Clinton that looks presidential. You'll always see the picture of Hillary Clinton that is eating a corn dog or her mouth is all screwed up. Well, but
here's the thing. If you've ever gone to CNN, and I've said this for years now, CNN picks the worst picture of anybody they can put on their website.
Well,
constantly, yeah. I'm seeing like bad screen captures of people with their mouths half gaping open. And I'm just like, you know, CNN's hired somebody entirely just to pick bad pictures of people.
Oh, yeah. No, it's definitely it's like, well, we need a picture that makes the celebrity look like an idiot. OK, there we go.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah. Anybody talking to Don Lemon? I hate that guy. You know who I like,
who's
though?
Don Lemon?
You know who I like? Don Lemon is the one who says the stupidest stuff. In fact, you could probably, don't do this because we could just go on a tangent for an hour about, here, Google this, now Google this. But Don Lemon was the one that when CNN was doing their 24/7 coverage of the Malaysian Air missing plane, actually said, so is it possible it was a black hole? And the guests are like, no, it's not possible. Well, but are you sure? Like, yeah, Don, knock it off.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He's look up Don Lemon quote sometimes. He's the worst. But you know who's good, though? Fox News. I don't watch Fox News at all because it's not really my my cup of tea. But Shepard Smith, I really respect that guy. Because he works.
I like him.
He works for the devil. But he's not afraid of saying no. We're not going to show that, or no, this is in poor taste, or you know what, guys? I made a mistake.
Every now and then. Sometimes he's crazy, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, again, when you work for the devil.
Also, he's constantly being outed, so I don't know if that's true or not.
Well, that would be, whatever. Now, if he was dating Don Lemon, that would disappoint me so greatly. Anyway, okay, so back to Home for the Holidays.
The Shepherd Lemon Wedding.
Ah, yeah, that would not be good. Although that would be another, perhaps the female equivalent to the corn dog could be a big old paper boat full of lemon shepherd.
So, Home for the Holidays.
Yeah, got a mouthful of shepherd pie. Anyway, so, Home for the Holidays, yes. We have Claudia Larson. Claudia is played by Holly Hunter. She's a single mom. However, she is very passionate about her job as an art restorer for a museum in Chicago. Unfortunately, the museum has budget cuts, and they're not nearly as enthusiastic about her as she is about the art. So, whether it's this sexy, sexy egg yolk scene during the opening credits, and followed by her getting fired and also kissing her boss, which was quite uncomfortable.
Yeah, I was going to say that was really awkward to watch.
Yes.
Now, was the implication that they had been fooling around before?
Oh, I don't think so. I think she was just in that blissful place. But, yeah. So, she gets fired as she's already going to spend Thanksgiving at the Baltimore home of her parents, while her only child, Kit, played by Claire Danes, decides to stay home and spend the holiday with her boyfriend, who she intends to have sex for the first time with. And she tells her mom in the car, as she's getting out of the car, going into the airport.
Actually, she says it as she's ready to pull away from the curb.
Yes, yes.
Almost like a doorknob confession.
Yes. Doorknob confession, is that a thing?
Yeah, doorknob confession. Sorry, that was a medical term almost. Doorknob confessions are when a client has just spent 20 to 30 minutes with their doctor going over everything, and everything's fine and happy and rosy, and then as the doctor's got his hand on the doorknob, you know, like, okay, well, we'll see you next visit. And the patient's like, well, there is this one thing. Like, you couldn't have mentioned it 20 or 30 minutes ago. You're going to wait until we're done. So, yeah, we call those doorknob confessions.
That's interesting.
Because they usually are things the customer doesn't, the client doesn't really want to talk about or is afraid to bring up. And so they just kind of, well, maybe it's not a big deal and we can talk about it next time. But usually it's big stuff.
Like bloody stools or this lump.
Or, you know, my penis is itching and there's all these bugs.
Yeah. So I wonder, doorknob confessions, that could be a... that could be a good HBO series, right after Taxi Cab Confessions.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Doorknob Confessions.
Except I think you get into that whole HIPAA thing.
Introduced by David Duchovny. No, there'll be reenactments. So they'll change the names.
Yeah, but you have to get the stories from somewhere.
Oh, yeah, that would be easy enough, I think. Yeah, it's HBO. They can make up the stories. Who cares?
That's true, too.
And they don't have to be medical. It could be all romantic, too.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, so back to Home for the Holidays.
The Man with One Red Shoe Diaries.
Ah, there we go. So back to Home for the Holidays. She's
got a cold. She's got some kind of ailment that she's been developing and kind of festering for some time. And then you get to watch her walk through this cavalcade of airport mishaps. Where she's, I think the best part was when she gets to walk by the row of phone booths, which is kind of almost anachronistic at this point. The row of people on the payphones who are all calling home and all the things that they're telling their families that they don't want to have to do. And the old lady that's like, can you tell me how to work this thing?
Yes. Yes. I thought it was funny. I think the ailment she has is called the fake sneezes because I was tired of her fake sneezing.
Well, yeah. And then she loses her coat and... You know, she has to get on the plane, and she gets on the plane to fly home, and she gets stuck with, that person that you don't want to sit next to on a plane, who seemed to have quite a lot of food brought on with her.
Oh, yes. Yes.
She's the fried
chicken and the egg, and yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. And then she decides that she's going to call her kid brother and make what must have been $1 million phone call.
Yes, indeed. $1 million doorknob confession, as a matter of fact. She's trying to prep her brother on the way.
Those phone calls weren't cheap. They were like $10 a minute.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And she just lost her job to boot. So...
I think we established she's not the most responsible with money, though.
No, she's not super. I mean, she's not super flaky, and she's not pathetic. That's what I think I like about her is that her character is not pathetic, but she definitely is like going through a rough patch of luck, let's say.
Yeah.
However, all of her family, you know, being a family movie for the holidays, everybody's got their own quirks. So her parents, Adele, played by Anne Bancroft, and Henry Larson, played by Charles Durning, who's fantastic. Then we have her brother, Tommy, who's Robert Downey Jr. And he brings his new friend, Leo Fish, played by Dylan McDermott. And I'd forgot how good Dylan McDermott is.
He really is good. But before you get there, you get that horrible car ride from the airport back to the Baltimore home.
With...
Where she's in the front seat of the car and her mom is like chain smoking in the back seat of the car and like playing with her hair. And she looks over at the car next to her and there's a guy in another car clearly in the back seat with his parents where they're yelling at him from the front seat. And he looks at her and she looks at him and they both have the same thought, like, just kill me now.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. So. It's, you know, and everybody reverts to their childhood selves when they're back at their parents' house for a holiday.
Even to this day, sometimes I have moments where Dad will say things and I will feel like I'm 8 years old.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He did it to me last week on the phone.
Oh, nice. So her brother Tommy, who she's really close with, happens to be gay. And the fact that he brings this guy with him to the holidays is something concerning to her because she's like, oh, what happened what happened with Jack? Something horrible must have happened with Jack. But the fact that Tommy is so, he's such a character, you don't really know if, you know, like, you don't, you're not going to get a serious story out of him for the most part. And there's never really a good time to say, what's up with you and Jack, if Leo is the prospective new boyfriend. And then we meet Aunt Glady. And Aunt Glady is awesome.
Well, because Aunt Glady is living in her own world.
Oh, definitely. And it's a happy place. And it's about
30 years ago. Oh. No, it's a great place. I mean, she's in a happy, great old time warp, but she's clearly, but she's also kind of in a zen place because, you know, she's got hundreds of plants and she's giving away lamps to anybody who comes over.
Yes. Yeah. She's
just, but I like, she has one of the best, she has one of the best lines in the movie. You know, is that your car? It looks like a carnival ride.
Well, she's got a lot of great lines. In fact, I was trying to find, you know, one of the things IMDb does for us is sometimes picks out good quotes. The quote section of this movie doesn't have a lot in IMDb because I wanted to have the entire, like, toast that they give before Thanksgiving dinner. Because Aunt Glady's toast is super uncomfortable and hilarious. But Henry's toast is off the wall and hilarious.
Okay. Dear Lord, we are honored that Leo Fish, such an attractive man sitting right next to Claudia,
Joanne, should choose. Look at your sister. Doesn't she look snazzy?
Spectacular.
And so we welcome him onto our
new diet.
Amen.
Dear Lord, we realize just that lately everything's changing too damn fast. And all sorts of things are always the same, even things we hated, like shoveling the turkey and stuffing the snow and going through the same crap year in and year out.
Honey, food's getting cold.
As I was saying, dear Lord, before my wife interrupted me, even those old-fashioned pain-in-the-ass traditions like Thanksgiving, which really means something to us, even though, goddammit, we couldn't tell you what it is, are starting to stop. And thousand-year-old trees are falling over dead, and they shouldn't. That's all from this end. Amen.
Oh, man.
Oh, woman.
That was absurd. Let's eat dead bird.
Walter, help Aunt Glady.
Tom's help your father carve. He can't.
His oh, Mom, no, I'm not good at that.
Please.
I don't want the extra responsibility.
He's going to hurt his wrist.
I don't want the problem, Mom. I just...
I'll carve.
Sweet potatoes?
Napkins.
Your father can carve. Your father can play his organ.
Like nobody's business. You're the best thing on two legs, Henry Lawson.
Claudia, Jell-O salad.
No, it's okay, Mom. I'm okay. And I knew it the very first second I ever laid my eyes on him, too. Thanksgiving Day, 1952, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, my sister brought that fella to our house for dinner after his own mother had stuffed him to the gills. And still he ate like a horse in a uniform.
Claudia, be a good girl. Pass the cranberry sauce to Leo.
Oh, I couldn't take my eyes off that dark blue uniform and those bright silver wings and his big, strong hands. And he had a little mustache.
I think we should just
stay out of it.
I think we got to hear this. I mean, go for it, Glenn.
I was 18 years old, and he was only 21, and we were both so nice looking. I can still taste the salt on his lips. Those soft, soft lips. And that tickly little, tickly little mustache. I could still feel it 43 years later. Like a toothbrush. He kissed me.
When?
One Christmas Eve. And for one special moment, my own little life was as big as I could ever want it to be. To have someone so close to you, they're inside you, when you're feeling small and scared and just so disappointed in yourself.
And whenever I look at your father, I know how lucky my sister must be. Because he made all my dreams come true for her. I was a Latin teacher. Holy shit.
Yeah, but could easily have come out of the mouth of our father.
Oh, I don't think quite. No, I don't think quite to this extent of weirdness, because I always thought that maybe something was wrong with Henry. Maybe confronted,
I'm just saying.
Perhaps being confronted by the love of your sister-in-law. Like if Aunt Jo confessed her love for Dad, yeah, then there may be some weird speech that came after that.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I don't think that's too far from, I mean, again, I'm not saying, you know, Dad would be the same speech, but I'm just saying I can imagine the same oratory to a certain degree of awkwardness.
And then Tommy luckily is the great pressure reliever. He's like, "Well, that was absurd. Let's eat the bird."
Yeah. Well, and they have the whole, you know, there's many great lines of which, you know, I think when sister,
yeah, I'm sorry. The sister is the other member of the family is Claudia and Tommy's sister, Joanne Larson Wedman.
And when Joanne calls him a freak, and he has this great speech where he's like, "You're calling me a freak?
Oh, God, Joanne, nice drama queen energy. Can you just set it down so it gets better for once instead of worse?"
"You're calling me a drama queen, Mr. Pervert?"
"Dad, put the camera down. Not now.
Put the camera down. Dad, wait. I mean, try to think back like 100 years ago, okay? I'm dead serious. Because I'm getting a feeling from this picture. Back when you guys came back from the hospital with Joanne.
Tommy.
Now, she was just a tiny little baby, right? So anything that happened, is it possible there was like a baboon family there in the hospital and that there was a switch-up, a little mix-up? And maybe you got the wrong one? Because I'm not kidding about this.
You little sleazy.
Aw, jeez.
Claudia, it's not even worth it.
No, you're calling me a freak.
No, I'm calling you a product of baboon loving. It's a distinction.
Oh.
Joanna.
No, don't muzzle me. You and I both know I am the only normal person here. I am.
I know. I just... Oh, your secret's safe with us, Cheetah.
My secret? Oh, that's great. Let's talk about secrets, huh? Congratulations, honey. Yeah, may you and your husband live happily ever after, Mrs. Gordon. Or whatever the Christ you call yourself now. Or he does. Did you wear a dress? Did you wear a white veil or a blue garter belt?
What the hell are you talking about, Joanne? You make about as much sense as a...
No shit. You and Jack?
Yeah. No shit.
When?
3 months ago, August 17th. When what?
What?
Hey, we'll talk about it later.
Yeah, now's not the time.
Where?
On a public beach. All his darling little friends who were prancing around like idiots and falling all over each other. He kissed him on the lips, you know? I mean, right in front of... Oh, I could throw up.
Mommy, I'm too bored. I have to go home.
And she's like, "You're calling me a freak?" And he goes, "No, I'm calling you a product of baboon loving."
Exactly. Oh, well, and there's, you know, normally the slapsticky parts of this kind of movie would a little bit turn me off, but there was something delightful about the fact that, first of all, they had two turkeys. I couldn't really figure out what the difference was between the two turkeys.
Well, one was Joanne's and one was their mother's.
Yes. And by the way, Joanne is married to Steve Guttenberg, Walter, who is a banker who's stuffy. And then their two children who are, I don't know if they're necessarily spoiled rotten kids, but they're just regular kids.
Yeah. They're clearly don't want to be there.
Yeah.
They have a clear bit of contempt for their grandma and grandfather because they really don't seem interested in it. I mean, and it's hard for me to watch this because, like, for me growing up as a kid, anytime I got to go or to grandma's or grandpa's, it was a great thing. Even though, in retrospect, like, step-grandfather Jerry wasn't really a nice guy. So being around him was not my favorite. Because I was always awkward and or being yelled at.
Yeah.
And being around Glenda, not always the greatest because she just didn't like us. So, you know, but you put up with that because I got to spend weekends with Grandma at that big house of Jerry's and, you know, putting dominoes down the stairs. Or we got to spend time at Grandpa's townhouse where he had that giant loft. Well, it wasn't a giant loft, but that loft over the closet that towered over his living room.
Which was a crazy thing. Like, why you would even have that there?
No, and that he would let us as, like, nearly infant children. I guess we weren't infants, but, you know, children just climb up there with abandon.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, definitely. That was, yeah.
No. But those are great holiday memories. So, but these children don't have that engagement with their grandparents. They just don't, they want to be somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah. Well, which, you know, I'm sure that sort of thing happens too. But, you know, of course, Joanne is super uptight. So, you know, she doesn't understand or get along with Tommy. She probably resents the fact that Claudia and Tommy get along much better.
Well, and the implication is that Joanne is the caregiver to Grandma and Grandpa, to her mom and dad, to their parents, when really Claudia and Tommy don't.
Well, yeah, because they don't live in the same town, and Joanne does.
Exactly.
And yet Joanne... And
so Joanne's taken the responsibility, whether or not they asked her to or not, she's taken the responsibility, and she feels responsible and beholden. And she's kind of half martyr, half angel, because, you know, she's doing the Lord's work, but she's also kind of martyring herself in the meantime.
Well, she's also resentful that Claudia and Tommy can just breeze in and be the life of the party when, you know, and get all of the attention when she's there day to day.
Yeah. So, but that's what family's about sometimes.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that never happens in our family, ever. So I'm not going to name names because there's a chance that only family members will listen to this show. And I want to be invited to Thanksgivings for pretty much any part of the family, you know, without darting anybody's doorstep or having people revoke their invitations.
No, you're always welcome at my Thanksgiving table.
Aw, that's so sweet. This year, because I changed my days off, I actually work on Thanksgiving. Which,
oh wow,
it turns out, it's not a bad day to work. I mean, it would be nice to, you know, to get, I mean, since Mom and Dad will be out of town, and it would be nice to head to go to Jennifer's house, but Kelly is already going to go to her mom's house, and I'll be working, so there's no conflict, you know. We'll just have to get together with the, you know, to get the kids together at some other time, but that's fine.
I think this is going to be the first year in many years that I'm actually not going to cook. So
excellent. Will you feel like
nobody had any real interest in I don't have any orphans this year, really. Normally I've done an orphan thing for years and years and years, but I don't really have any orphans this year, which is not a bad thing. But, so I just said, you know what? We're going to come back from Vegas, and I have a couple of days off still. I took the whole week off to recover, and we come back Tuesday, and Thursday's Thanksgiving, and we're going to go out.
So where are Mom and Dad going to be on Thanksgiving Day?
In Vegas.
Oh, they'll still be in Vegas?
Yeah.
Oh, excellent. So...
I actually encouraged them. I said, because they were really fretting about it. They were like, well... You know, we could go back and I said, just take the time off.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. No.
You're not
they need to go to the equivalent of Stuart Anderson's cattle company and bring home boot glasses.
Exactly. See, that would be the best Thanksgiving memory ever. But I said, you guys are gonna be in Vegas in Thanksgiving. How many people are gonna, you know, there's gonna be something crazy. You guys should go find it.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
I don't know. Maybe they'll go find tequila shooters for Thanksgiving or something. I don't know. But no, I imagine it would be great. And I really didn't. Vegas for me is good for about 4 days. After that, I start to get a little crazy. So I need to go home. But they really dig it. So I said, just stay. You know, take the time. Enjoy it. Don't worry about it. Take a year off.
Yeah, absolutely. And they'll be here for Christmas. Yeah, it'll be fine. We're all fairly tight-knit anyway, so it all works out.
Yeah.
What was it? Oh, the nice thing about working on Thanksgiving is it's usually a fairly mellow day. I mean, sometimes, like Thanksgiving and Christmas, depending on the weather, you can end up with car accidents because people are on the road kind of during the day. But it's kind of quiet around the middle of the day because, you know, people end up eating early. But they may stay over at people's houses, so the traffic doesn't really get super busy. And I leave at 7 p.m., so it will be like before people are starting to go to those Black Friday, pre-Black Friday events or whatever.
And before all the, you know, Uncle Gorgie's eggnog has come to effect.
Yeah. Plus, there'll be a shitload of food at work, which is always nice. Mike, the one thing we do well at my job is we can put together a potluck.
Oh, nice.
So, anyway, okay. So back to Home for the Holidays. This will be a 3-hour podcast. We'll just never talk about the movie. We end up, mom, because Claudia is a single mom who's always trying to do her motherly thing of setting her daughter up, arranges for a possible problem with the boiler so she can call the heating repairman, Russell, to make a little house call and set him up to meet up with Claudia. And Russell is played by David Strathairn, and he is the most pathetic guy in the entire world.
He really kind of is.
Hi, Claudia.
Hello, Russell.
God. Hiya.
You work for the...
There's something you've got to see here.
What?
Yes. It's my own company.
Oh, no, I don't think I'm going to see this.
Oh, sure. I'm just letting the guys have a day off, you know, so they can visit their families since I'm all alone this year.
This is the saddest sack in the universe.
Yeah, and I don't have anybody anymore. My brother and sister got canned and they left town, and then my parents went and died on me.
I'm so sorry. I had no idea.
Yeah, well, you know, it was a car wreck. It was last summer. Drunk driver. Cut right across the, the meridian. And pow, head on. Yeah. So, like I said, I don't have anybody anymore, really. Nowhere to go, you know, today. No family or nothing. But I guess everybody sort of needs me, you know. I mean, everybody needs heat, right? Huh?
Oh, yeah.
You know? And they're counting on somebody to be there, and hey, that's me today. See?
Yeah, didn't you have a girlfriend or?
Yeah, she went and married my best buddy, right?
Oh. You still look so beautiful, Claudia.
Oh, God, I do not.
You do too. Well, I guess then. Well, this was nice.
Yeah, it was nice.
Kind of glad your furnace acted up.
You know, maybe next year will be better for you.
Hey, yeah, or worse. Hey, Tommy.
Hey, Russell.
How you doing? About them Panthers?
And the thing with this is I just keep seeing him as Whistler from Sneakers.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So, so that's fun. And so, you know, during this whole thing, you know, again, Claudia doesn't have time to ask Tommy about this Leo Fish guy that he's bringing with him. So,
well, and even when she does try, he deflects anyway. He deflects and defers.
Exactly. Yes. So
he's fucking with her on purpose.
Oh, exactly.
He knows he's doing it.
Well, exactly, because where she construes as Leo being Tommy's new boyfriend, but really Tommy brought Leo to meet Claudia because Tommy, it turns out, married Jack, which becomes
Joanne's meltdown.
Yes, exactly. Well, first, again, at the dinner, we have the Aunt Gladys confesses her love for Henry. And then we have Henry's incoherent toast. And then we have Joanne getting the turkey and turkey juice all over her. And refusing to change her clothes because she's just so mad. And then so the rest of the movie, Claudia ends up meeting with all of the different members of her family to kind of patch things up. Or really just to relieve the tension because she's going to go back to Chicago. And so she needs to make sure that everything, you know, she finds out that Tommy and Jack got married. So that's exciting. And she's got to make up with Joanne, where she ends up over at Joanne's house, where they have a conversation that I think is actually really poignant.
I'm not perfect. Look, I said I was sorry.
Well, that's great. You know, you just think you're so much better than we are.
What? Huh?
6 minutes left.
Joanne, you need your head examined.
Don't tell me what I need. Don't tell me what I need. Don't. Mom needs her puzzles, and she needs to lose every single thing she owns 40 times a day. And Dad needs to wash every car in the neighborhood until his fingers bleed. And they both need to keep me going 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, trying to anticipate every single thing that could go wrong.
So don't. What's going to happen to them? They're going to explode. They're getting old. We're all getting old.
That's great. That's great, Claudia. What should I do then? Run away? Like you and Tommy? Yeah, just, you know, live it up, right? No grown-up responsibility. Just wallow in your own exotic little lives.
You don't know the first thing about me, Joanne. Nothing.
Likewise, I'm sure. If I just met you on the street, if you gave me your phone number, I'd throw it away.
We don't have to like each other, Joe. We're family.
I thought it was actually really poignant, but also really just like cuts just right to the bone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's the cold, hard facts, but it's also what family is about. So
no, yeah, no, you don't pick your family. You're just stuck with them.
Yeah, exactly. So you make do.
Now, we're blessed in our family that, you know, I think we all get along with each other in our own kind of crazy.
Yeah. No, we do okay, I think. Yeah. Yeah, life is weird. By the way, sort of a callback to the Wreck podcast that, of course, your mom won't watch the movie Wreck either, but where Drew and I talked about how just Visqueen is kind of scary just on its own. Well, there's now a big old tent of Visqueen where the new deck is going to be. And it's like a full-on, like, there's like wood supports keeping the Visqueen up, you know. Like a full-on tent.
So it looks like a set from Outbreak.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
And you're going to throw some heaters in there, and pretty soon they'll have a big old deck.
Good times.
Yeah. But,
Like I said, I'm thrilled now. I got to figure out where I'm going to put the hot tub.
Oh, yeah. There'll be a... You'll see. The place for the hot tub is pretty obvious. Yeah. So the hot tub will come crashing down and destroying the restored classic car.
Well, that's inevitable.
Exactly. So anyway,
but it will involve some drill mishap probably. And are some anchor bolts that didn't hold or something
while trying to fix the one light that burned out on the Christmas lights that are hanging in the eaves. We're standing on the top railing of the deck, leaning over
after putting tinfoil in the fuses and the cord to get them to work.
Yeah. Well, you know, that, you learn by doing. That's what I'm just saying. So, yeah. So, again, there's not much really to the plot of this movie because it's just a kind of a slice of life holiday movie. But, you know, I think the conversation between Claudia and Joanne kind of sums it up. It's like, look, you know, we don't have to like each other. We're family anyway. So, you know, let's just make the best of it.
We're stuck. We're stuck no matter what.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think the end of the movie, the little tarmac memory, is one of the most beautiful poignant things in a movie that I've seen. I think that's one of the reasons I really dig this movie, is because that scene at the end where all the kids are together and they're reliving the memory of their dad and standing on the tarmac with the plane flying. I mean, it's first of all, visually, it's beautiful, but it's just you get such a sense of the family. It's such a snapshot in time.
Well, yeah. And that's, you know, like, yeah, exactly. That's what you want in a holiday movie too. You want to have, and unlike Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, it doesn't seem like a fake ending. Like, Steve Martin's wife.
None of this movie's really like. Everything in this movie, coming from our family, like, this movie's probable. This could have happened.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, we could have lived through any of this.
Sure.
I mean, obviously, now you don't have gate goodbyes at the airport anymore. That's for sure. They're probably not going to let you on with a lamp anymore either.
Well, you never know.
Certainly not with a gallon of orange juice in your hand.
No, no. They'll make you check the damn lamp, that's for sure.
Yeah. You know, but the way that their dad is talking about how, you know, all the kids had a different reaction to being on the tarmac and the mom was terrified, but how she was just kind of fearless.
Yeah.
Which is funny because when she's flying on the plane, she's not fearless at all. She's terrified.
And, you know, that's the other thing is that, you know, you don't know, again, with my day-to-day experience of being a father, you know, you really don't know how your kids are going to react to stuff. And I'm sure Drew has a better barometer. Well, not, he has a different view because he's got two kids who are liable to react in two different ways to the same situation. And you just never know who's going to end up being the fearless one and who's going to end up being the careful one during any given circumstance, because it could flip flop.
Yeah.
So, and like, you know, like Journey, let me tell you, I was pretty much a fraidy cat for anything like super scary, but I was pretty physical. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, climbing and stuff wasn't really a problem for me. And Journey doesn't really like that kind of activity. So she's a lot more tentative to like play on the big playground equipment, say, than I was expecting. On the other hand, she will go up and have a conversation with any stranger on any subject.
Oh, dear.
Which is, I mean, it's scary on the one hand, but on the other hand, it's hilarious. Because, you know, it just, I mean, you know, sometimes
it's, well, it's like, a great skill. It's a great skill for her to have, at least, because from my opinion, it's contrary to you.
Oh, it's totally contrary to me. Yeah. I would not talk to anybody. So
that's awesome.
She makes me talk to other people.
Well, I think being a parent makes you have to talk to other people as well.
Yeah,
though.
Exactly. Yeah. And although that choice is
out of your hands.
Well, and as someone very wise once told me, I can't remember which of my coworkers, but it's not a problem because it turns out you already have a commonality when you talk to other people about your kids, because they've got kids too. So if nothing else, you can talk about kids. And so, I mean, for the most part, it's hilarious, especially these days when everybody's got cell phones that have lots of multimedia and, you know, people have headphones on, not just me. So it's people, dads especially, don't talk to other dads unless they're forced to. But moms talk to other moms, and sometimes you're confronted with having to talk to a mom. But turns out you all have the same experiences to a greater or lesser extent.
I can see that.
I mean, all you have to say is kids, and then they know what you're talking about. And you know what they're talking about. It's fine, you know?
Yeah. You have a common reference.
Yeah. And like, for instance, taking a pillow and a sleeping bag to a school to watch a movie would not be something I would be comfortable with as a single person or a person without children, nor would I be welcome.
And yet, well, you'd probably end up on a registry somewhere.
Exactly. And yet now, I mean, I walk in the school like I own it, because as it turns out, I do own it, at least a tiny bit of it.
Yes, you do.
And it makes a difference to me that everything is all, you know, as long as everything is kind of going okay at the school, and I pay attention now, where I used to pay attention to the Pioneer Home and to Grandma's condo building as far as if things went on there. But now I pay attention to the school. So, and to a lesser extent, Costco, because, you know, Kelly's,
yeah,
Kelly's, Kelly can, unless there's something dramatic that happens at Costco, Kelly's pretty safe there in her little corner of the world.
Yeah. I don't imagine they get active shooters, so.
Well, they could, but it's kind of a long way to go to the pharmacy. You have to really get back in there. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, it would have to be somebody who is gunning for the people at the pharmacy, which could happen, but, you know.
I have these nice motorized steel shutter doors, so.
Yeah, well, they don't have steel shutter doors. I'm not even sure. They must have a locking door. Yeah, they have to.
They have to.
Yeah, but I think by law they have to. But,
yes.
You know.
the DEA takes a dim view of not locking up drugs.
I think so. Well, but again, like any workplace violence thing, the chances of a wacko customer coming to kill all you are probably a little bit less than the fact that a coworker will come and kill all of you. So,
no, yeah.
I've already determined the person who comes in and shoots up the place I work, oh, we'll let them in the door because I know them.
Yeah.
So, anyway. So, since I am a very large target, I try to make myself pretty, a pretty happy-go-lucky coworker to avoid the inevitable shooting. So, like, hey, there's no reason to shoot him. He's generally nice to people. Like, he wasn't one of those evil bitches I work with. So, yeah. I'm quoting the gunman, who is clearly insane, because I love all my coworkers.
Absolutely.
Anyway, so. Anyway, so happy Thanksgiving. Gobble, yeah. Gobble. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.